please show your support to this radio station that has been on the side of the essential workers since day one and continuing. 516-620-3602 is the number to call to show your support. Now stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
And at 7 o'clock, you are listening to WBAI New York. It's time for Off the Hook.
So I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. Oh, did it bomb for the best? Expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But did it know?
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this, what is it, Wednesday night, another exciting night in the Big Apple that we are not currently in because of all the craziness. But we are here for another hour tonight, talking about technology, hacking, things going on in the street, things going on in our lives. And I'm joined tonight by Kyle.
Of course, yeah, I'm here.
And we're going to open up this Skype channel, see if this works.
Yes, it shouldn't be too alarming.
All right. We have Rob, I believe.
Good evening.
And we have Gila.
Hello.
And you two are in the same location, just so people know the limits of our technology. And Alex is someplace else.
Good evening, everyone.
All right, then. How is everyone? It's been 2 weeks since we've been on the air.
Yeah, same.
The same. Okay, all right. Well, you know what? The country isn't the same. It certainly changed in 2 weeks. We have not been on the air since the insurrection began. And now we're in a different place, which I think is just great. Have you guys been a part of any of what's been going on?
No, we have. There have been all sorts of demonstrations and protests and teach-ins going on. We were at one in our neighborhood in Queens earlier this week, mm-hmm. and you know, that I think that was our first time venturing out to such a thing, and it was interesting. Everyone was masked up. Everyone was doing what they could to social distance, but it was still a meaningful event.
You know, it's interesting you say that because Kyle and I actually went to one in Suffolk County last night in Smithtown, and noticed the same thing. People were masked except for the cops. The cops weren't wearing masks, and I have to wonder, is that policy? Why would you go out there with literally a crowd of people and fellow cops and not wear masks? It just seems like a dumb thing to do. Well, I think I might have answered my own question. Why are they doing it? But still, come on, people. We care about you, too. Well, are you getting sick and getting the rest of us sick? So I've seen cops wear masks. I know they can do it. So I don't get why they're not doing it in situations like this. But it was kind of a weird experience that we had because we were walking around the entire town looking for the demonstration apparently we got there right after they marched someplace, but nobody knew where they marched. And the only way to find out where they were was to stand within earshot of cops and overhear what was on their radio, and that gave us the updates we needed. So we were able to basically follow based on what we were overhearing on the cop radio.
And some of the news coverage has needed to use scanners and be a little bit more in tune with how the enforcement actions are changing and how they're corralling people. It seemed like it took, from my perspective, the media a couple weeks to really gear up. And I mean, they were there right at the beginning of a lot of the coverage when the precinct was set on fire and there were vans in New York and just a lot of the initial tumult. But the coverage has been ongoing and I think consistent. You know, it's been a really heartening to see the media bring some skill to just knowing where things are and then getting that information out so people aren't caught off guard. And you can really learn a lot just by overhearing some radio, whether it's a scanner or just next to officers that are standing around.
Now, it's interesting because no matter where you go, you see this. You see this kind of thing happening. You see activism sprouting its head. It's a wonderful thing to see. We pass by driving, just two people standing on a street corner holding up a sign that says Black Lives Matter. And, of course, you know, you honk, and it makes people so happy when you beat at them going by. And they're part of a demonstration, and you feel happy too when you're a part of that demonstration. Alex, I'm curious. You're still in Pennsylvania, where there's very few people. Have you seen any sign, any indication of any of what's been going on in the country in your neck of the woods?
I have not at all.
Nothing.
I have seen literally zero. But that's not to say that there is nothing. It's just, you know, an indication. Excuse me, Mike. Damn email there. It's just an indication that I haven't really been out of the house very much. You know, I'm being a good boy and staying in, despite the fact that the county in which I'm in has officially reopened. However, I was in New York last week on Monday. I had an emergency situation where I had to drive from Pennsylvania into the city to my office. That was occasioned by our beloved Con Edison. Con Ed had decided to turn off the power to the ninth floor of my law firm's building, and that's where we're located. And I think they just were operating under the erroneous assumption that since nobody's in the office, they can shut the power off. They shut the power off. About seven of my servers went down, and I had to rush in there and turn things back on. And I will tell you, though, I mean, that was Monday. That was last Monday, which was really in the thick of it when it comes to the protests. And what I saw was really quite interesting and a little bit scary. I mean, my office is on 28th and Broadway. And as soon as I got there to 28th and Broadway, after driving 2 hours, more than 2 hours...
Isn't that exactly where that barbecue place in Mr. Robot is, 28th and Broadway?
That's exactly right. In fact, when that was two seasons ago with Mr. Robot, that was the Red Wheelbarrow, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that's where you were?
It's almost exactly the literal location of the Red Wheelbarrow that they used in Mr. Robot was an empty lot right next to my office.
All right, guys. What's going on here? You trying to play me for a fool or something?
Always.
Are you Mr. Robot?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been called worse things, so I'll take it.
Well, continue with your story.
So in any event, so I get to 28th and Broadway right in the aftermath of a scuffle between demonstrators and the NYPD, and the NYPD was about 40 strong on that corner, all set up with riot gear. They looked like they were waiting for hell to break loose. And I didn't know what had just happened. I literally just drove up. I decided I didn't care one way or the other if I was going to get a parking ticket. I didn't want to drive around. I didn't want to have a valet in my car either. So I parked there. I went into the office and got down. And things were just very, very empty. This is the first time I'd been back to the city in 3 months. And I'll tell you, something totally crazy happened to me while I was driving from my office. After I had finished what I needed to do in the office, I was sitting southbound on Fifth Avenue. And as you may recall, Fifth Avenue has traffic that only heads south in the city. And I'm in the left lane of Fifth Avenue, and then all of a sudden, there's a car racing northbound in that same lane. Some lunatic is just driving the wrong way up Fifth Avenue. And I thought, oh, my God, is this a cop? Whatever. It wasn't a cop. I had to swerve out of the way. And that was just the foreshadowing of what was to come in the city.
Can I just ask you, Alex, how do you know it wasn't a cop?
Well, it could have been somebody deep undercover. I mean, I caught a look at the guy as he passed by me when I had to swerve into the right lane. It did not look like a cop, unless it was somebody who was very seriously undercover. And, it could have been, I don't know. But, I mean, my assumption is that it wasn't a cop. and this guy didn't look like he knew what the hell he was doing.
Cops.
And he went,
cop. Yeah, you got a cop there, I think. I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah. But in any event, but speaking of cops, I started to head southbound towards the village where I live to just go and check things out. And the protest had started, and people just started blowing red lights to get away from it. Cops weren't doing anything. It felt like complete bedlam over there. Hold on.
I think Alex has a family situation going on.
Yeah, I did, yeah. But, in any event, I had to make a decision at that point. I'd waited for the protest to go by 6th Avenue for about a half an hour, sitting in traffic. I got to 7th Avenue, and I decided to sort of swing around, check out my neighborhood, check out my building. Somebody had stolen the front wheel of my bike while I've been gone. And, you know, that's not cool. I've always had a bike out on, you know, in my neck of the woods for, you know, the last 10 years
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, but not for months at a time without being looked at.
But that stings. That's like a certain betrayal. I don't know.
It is, because everybody knows me in my neighborhood. They know it's my bike, and it just feels like whoever did this, you know, wasn't from my neck of the woods, and it really pissed me off.
Outside agitators stealing your bike wheels. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Maybe it was the cops. Maybe they.
Okay, well, anyway, so you lost a bike tire. But the thing that gets me is that you've stayed out of the city literally for months, and you drive back in just to get into a traffic jam with all the demonstrators that were marching at that particular time. It just seems like you couldn't have planned this better.
Well, it wasn't planned at all. I didn't intend on doing this. It was Con Edison that made me do it. You know, I could have sent somebody else in, but, you know, if you get a whole bunch of servers, all of which have their hard drives spinning constantly, almost 24 hours a day, and then all of a sudden the power goes out, there's a good likelihood that something is going to be amiss, and I would have to go in anyway. Thank God, everything was fine. Everything rebooted all right. But I had to make a decision at that point, and, you know, and the decision was, do I stay in the city at my place in the West Village, or do I get the hell out? And I checked the traffic to head back to Pennsylvania. It was the shortest period of time for me to get back here that I'd ever seen. 7th Avenue was completely empty, and I took the chance to get the hell out. And I'm sort of glad that I did. I think if I was younger and I didn't have a wife and kids and responsibilities and things, I would have stayed and possibly gone outside. But I got out of there. But let me tell you, it was an experience being back in the city. It felt a lot different to me, and it felt more dangerous in a sense. Not dangerous in the sense of, you know, potential to get sick, but just dangerous in the sense that the people that were outside probably had nowhere else to go, and I felt like there were I wouldn't have wanted to be outside at night in my neighborhood last Monday. I'll put it that way.
Well, if I could suggest one thing, they have these little switches that you can control remotely that will simply power everything back on, so you don't have to drive across country to turn on a server.
It's a great time to be alive, huh?
Next time Con Ed does this to you, you can simply cycle the power and see what happens, and only drive in if something doesn't come back.
Yeah.
These things
that
are
would be
useful, and it would be the perfect scenario, right, to avoid having to go back. But I feel like home automation and tools like that have been around for like 20 years. Just takes sort of a little bit of time and, you know, making it one of those side projects that you eventually get to. But maybe that'll help.
Well, I want to get into a little more about what's been going on in the streets of this country, in fact, of the world. But first, I have to point out that we are in the I think this is the final week of the BAI fundraiser. I want to thank everybody who called in last week. We had a good response. Well, actually, not last week, the week before that. 2 weeks ago, we had a good response, and hopefully we'll get a good response tonight. It's the last time we're going to be offering these items for your support here at WBAI. Imagine a city, imagine a country without WBAI, where we talk about things that are going on, where we see what's happening in the streets of America, the changes that are taking place quickly. You need a voice. You need an outlet to express all of this, to give an outlet to people to express their opinions, to have the conversation, to debate. It's so important, and so many places don't have that. So keeping WBAI on the air is so key, so important. So our phone number is 516-620-3602, and by calling that number, you will be connected to somebody who will ask how much you want to pledge, and if you desire a thank you gift from us, we have several. We have the Hacker Tote Bag. It's you want to describe that, Kyle?
Yeah, it's a black cotton, 100% cotton. It's 15.5 by 15 standard sort of tote bag size, what you might expect. And it has our unique monochrome white ink government seal. This is an iconic 2600 pattern that actually debuted on a hoodie, the government seal hoodie, and it has since donned T-shirts, yes, black T-shirts, and now the black Hacker Tote Bag. And this can be yours at the $25 level.
So it looks like you're a government official, but in actuality, it says the Hacker Quarterly.
That's right, and the Eagle has some cuffs, some cash, and a keyboard, which, you know, it's a bit of a bit of a joke, but also quite serious. You know, it addresses you know what you might mistake for the olive branches and the arrows on the Great Seal of the United States. So our version has been updated a little bit. Speaks to some issues hackers care about.
So that's for a pledge of $25, the Hacker Tote Bag. We also have the 2600 3-year subscription. That's where you'll get the actual paper magazine for the next 3 years. 2600 comes out quarterly, talks all about computer hacking, latest in technology, privacy invasions, consumer protection, all that kind of thing. That's for a pledge of $50, which is less than what a 3-year subscription actually costs. So you'd be supporting WBAI and getting 2600 for the next 3 years. And finally, we have for a pledge of $150 the Hacker Digest full set and lifetime subscription. This is our most popular item because what this is all the issues of 2600 magazine that go back to 1984 in digital form, PDF, non-DRM.
High resolution.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. That's for a pledge of $150. Go back to 1984 and continues on into the future. Once a year, you will receive another PDF for the previous year. So that's for a pledge of $150, 516-620-3602. Oh, I think I just figured out. I'm communicating off air. We're low when the Skype people are up, so I'm going to turn them down, and you'll hear me get louder. This is how our board works right now. So that solves the problem. Interesting. All right, we're just learning about this now, learning on the air, talking to all different people at once. We have to figure this out. So basically,
I think it's also related to this channel being up over here.
You blame my
no
computer?
No one knows what I'm talking about.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'll turn my computer down.
Right.
I'll turn the Skype people back up, and it's nice. So we get lower again when I do that. So it's totally bad.
Okay,
totally
I have no
bad.
Idea
it's
what
their,
I'm talking
it's
about.
It's their fault. It's all their right. fault. So basically, the way we can solve this is the Skype people. You can see them. I can't. When they wave their hands at you and they want to speak, you cue them. I'll turn them up at that point. But until then, we can't hear them because they make us low. I'm sorry, folks, for having to have the technical conversation over the air, but these are hard times, and we have to do this.
I feel like we can get past this.
I feel like we are.
Mm-hmm.
516-620-3602. Please show your support for WBAI. It is super important. I'll let our friends on Skype say a few words about WBAI and why people should call.
Absolutely, and if you're not into calling, you can also get on WBAI give to WBAI.org, which is WBAI's website for supporting the station. You can pull down on the menu which show is your favorite show on WBAI. We would hope you would choose off the hook, and you can see these premiums. We've got the Hacker Digest full set. And lifetime subscription for $150 or more. 3 years of the physical magazine, 2600, the Hacker Quarterly for $50 or more, and the Hacker Tote Bag for $25 or more. You could also text WBAI to the short code 41444 if you'd rather just get a link that way that you can use to donate directly. And all these goodies are excellent things. 2600 is a wonderful magazine. I just re-upped my own subscription. But also the most important thing that you get for supporting WBAI is what we're doing now, is this station. Not just our program, but all the programs that WBAI brings to the air, voices that would otherwise go unheard but are worth hearing. What we've been doing since 1960 is what you're hearing now. It's giving honest information, like just sharing what we know and what we do and how we do it and all the various ways we do, without corporate, without commercial interference, unfiltered, and just doing what we can to bring that to you. So if you'd like to keep us doing that, text WBAI to 41444 or go to give to WBAI.org. That's give and the numeral 2, WBAI.org.
Also, a friendly reminder that a gift of at least $25 makes you a member of WBAI and thus enables you to do awesome things like vote in station bylaw votes. If we want to be able to make sure that the station doesn't get taken over again by outside influences, the best thing we can do is make sure that you are a member of the station, that you can vote for the Pacifica bylaws. We're not going to tell you how to vote, but, you know, do what you can to keep us on the air. Also, fun fact, a gift of $25 gets you a WBAI tote bag. So for those of you who are doing the math, $25 gets you the hacker tote bag. $25 gets you the WBAI tote bag. Two tote bags for the price of one.
I think it's one or the other, actually. But
oh, I was so excited.
Yeah.
Well, just to clear it up, it's $25 for the hacker tote bag, $50 for the 3-year subscription to 2600, $150 for the lifetime subscription to the Hacker Digest, and you can pledge more certainly and get a whole lot more. And you can also call 516-620-3602 and ask what else is available, because there are plenty of things that the friendly people there will offer. And also, there are different ways you can pledge. You can go to give2wbai.org, and I believe you can also text. Is that right, Gila?
That's correct. You can text WBAI to the short code 41444. You'll get an automated response telling you how to donate. Another thing to keep in mind is that you can also become a BAI buddy. If we've learned anything in this world the last few months, it's that the things we can rely on are really, really helpful. And if you become a BAI buddy, that is reliable monthly donations to the station. The more people who become BAI buddies, the less we have to do pledge drives, because if we have more reliable donations coming in, the better off we are. So consider becoming a BAI buddy for a low monthly cost, which will help the station keep going.
Yeah, and that gives you the advantage of not having to manage as much when we are doing the fundraisers. You'll know that you're already participating, you already are a part of the Pacific Network, and you're supporting the station. So I'm so glad you reminded us of that aspect of the station membership programs, because the buddies are really, really helpful when we're trying to cover between fundraising events like this one. And, you know, overhead and infrastructure, the operational costs don't stop, as everyone knows it.
And we want to hear from our listeners. We want to know that people have been calling 516-620-3602 during this hour. This is the last week of the fundraiser, from what I've been told, and hopefully that's true. Hopefully we reach all the goals that we need to, because WBAI has never been a more vital source of information. The coronavirus, the uprisings in the street, it's an interesting time, and more interesting times are ahead, and we're going to get through them together. That is the only way we're going to get through them.
One thing I would like to mention about WBAI is, you know, the community nature of this is just so important right now. Not just the hacker community, you know, that we have listening to our show and the listener community here, but the fact that WBAI represents a community of progressives in New York during this time of a global pandemic and what, quite frankly, like you said, Emmanuel, amounted to an insurrection over the last 2 weeks on account of police brutality around the nation. There is something to be said for telling it like it is, without censorship, without having to rely on the quote-unquote Main Street media, without...
Really? A dog now, too? You got a dog there as well? Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
She's telling it like it is, too. I mean, that's Cleo just agreeing with me, I think, wholeheartedly, 100%. that WBAI is going to be unfiltered news, unfiltered reports of what's happening from the street, from the ground level, from the perspective of activists, from the perspective of community leaders, from the perspective of people like us, like the hacker community. You're not going to get that anywhere else. The fact that it exists in 2020 is a bizarre anomaly that is due entirely to the support of our listeners for the last 60 years. That's a freaking miracle. Let's keep it going. Please, pledge to the station. Become a WBAI buddy like Gila had mentioned, or the hacker tote bag is awesome, the BAI tote bag is awesome, but please support our station because it is so important that we stay on the air. We need you.
I live for the bizarre anomalies, so many times. And in addition, I don't know if you mentioned the WBAI face mask. That's another thing that's being offered. If you call 516-620-3602, just ask them about it. They'll have all the information.
While supplies last.
Yes.
I hear those are a very popular item, so you may be on the tail end of that.
Yeah,
so
but get supplies them. Can be reordered. So
that's true.
Let's
check. But yeah. Definitely call in, and if you're interested, ask about that gift as well.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of bizarre anomalies, we should talk about hope, because that is certainly a bizarre anomaly that exists in the most trying of times. That's the Hackers on Planet Earth conference that is not taking place in person this summer, as pretty much nothing is, but we decided to do the best we can with what we have. And the response so far has been nothing short of just super inspiring. This community never fails to teach me things and to just give me hope for just the future. We have expanded the conference from 3 days to 9 days because it's in a virtual environment. We want to give something back. We want to make this an exciting time. We want to make this a highlight of the summer. And it's going to run from July 25th all the way to August 2nd. And we are encouraging people to submit their speaker ideas, talks, panels. If you have something related to technology or the hacker culture, or just something you would like several thousand people, or actually many more times than that, when you count everybody in the world who's going to be tuning in, if you want to share that with people, that is something that you should consider being a part of. All the details are at www.hope.net, and there's a click on the speaker button.
Also, / participate has a really good organization of all the different ways right in one spot.
There are a lot of ways. We have people, volunteers of all sorts, doing all kinds of different things with workshops, with talks, with reaching out to the press, with organizing all kinds of logistical things, setting up the hardware and the software. It's a real challenge, and it feels... Yeah, I got to say, having been involved in the Hope Conference up until now, it feels like a Hope Conference. The environment is different, but the excitement is the same. And that is what is so incredible to me, that we can actually pull this off and still be in all the corners of the globe. And that's what's going to be cool about this, is that you'll be a part of the conference from wherever you happen to be, and you'll see people coming to you from everywhere, all different places, that they wouldn't have been able to do before because, well, everyone had to be crammed into the Hotel Pennsylvania. And since we can't do that this year, well, we're going to use the entire world instead. So there's still time, not much time, probably about a couple of weeks, for you to submit your speaker ideas, your talks, panels, debates, whatever it is you want to have. If you're a musician and you want to perform something from wherever you happen to be, we're reserving the late night hours for those kinds of things. If you have other ideas, too, we want to hear from you. You can write to us at hope@hope.net. That's one address you can use. Or you can just go to the website, www.hope.net, and read all about it there. There are going to be all kinds of changes, announcements. We're going to have 9 different keynote speakers because it's a 9-day conference. Who ever heard of 9 keynote speakers? And if you have suggestions, we have some locked in, others not yet. So if you have suggestions on who you think would make a good keynote speaker, definitely write to us. You can write to us, hope@hope.net, or here at the radio show, oth@2600.com.
Yeah, and the ability to bring in all the different kinds of content and creative things we would have in a physical form, it will change things. And we're navigating, and we're going to be supporting presenters, people who are involved in workshops, artists and musicians. We're going to be helping people as much as we can, but we're really trying to get the word out. So if you maybe don't have anything yet, but you know someone who does want to share an idea or share their hackerspace or tell people about a social action or some sort of legal aspect that affects telecommunications and affects computing and the internet at large, we're really interested in hearing from them. We want to give them an opportunity. This is 9 days. 9 days straight. It's amazing. Of broadcast with short sections where people can ask questions live. So any and all participation is really strongly encouraged. We want to get that call out there. And just please, if you do nothing else, tell a friend, tell a young person or a student who maybe wants to try public speaking. Give them a sense of what hope is, and refer them to this, because we're really excited to have a lot of participation and a lot of different voices.
And by the way, by participating as an attendee, by either holding on to your ticket or getting a new ticket, that ensures that we survive, that the magazine survives, that the future conferences survive, that even the radio show survives, because, well, we need to be able to have roofs over our heads to continue doing all the things we do. And this year has been, it's been insane. It really has been insane. One thing that's happened, we've lost a lot of our sales of the magazine because distributors shut down, Barnes & Noble shut down. But now, with the hacker spirit, we have decided to try something else. We had the opportunity to get the magazine, get this, into grocery stores, mostly in the western half of the United States. So places like Ralph's and what was that other one? Albertsons
and Safeway, I believe. Fred Meyer as well.
Wow. So we're showing up literally on the checkout stand where TV Guide sometimes is, except now it's 2600. So that's kind of amazing that this is even happening.
Kroger.
Let's see if it works. It might be a disaster. It might cause more insurrection. But you got to try different things. When adversity rears its ugly face, you just have to try something new. And that's what we're trying to do on all levels this year. And the support of the people out there, you're the only reason we're going to make it through this. And we will forever, forever be in your debt for that. So
it's that spirit of adapting and thinking creatively, thinking of unusual ways to route around problems, and that is the hacker spirit, and that's how we are available. So yeah, look out for us in your essential grocery store.
Skype people, any comments before we move on to some stories?
I am just fascinated by how the focus in general has been heading this way, even before this pandemic hit. But people have gone from, like, just having subscriptions to a whole cable channel for one show, or, you know, buying this whole thing so they could get this one part of it, to supporting people directly who do things that that they appreciate. Like, people go on crowdfunding sites to, you know, donate to business ideas and products that they want to see. They go on sites like Patreon and things like that to support artists and creators directly that they want to do. And this has been like such a game changer in the general world of people out there trying to make a living with the things they do. But it's also what we've been doing to keep this station on the air for 60 years. It's like the simplest idea. We don't need to get money from somebody else to tell you what kind of soda you should be drinking. What we do is we keep everything going here because listeners like you think it's worth it to donate to help us keep doing what we do. We do what we do. We do the work we do. We do the magazine, the conference, and this radio show directly for the people who appreciate it and keep them going. So if you call 516-620-3602 or go to give2wbai.org or text WBAI to 41444, you can be part of that. You can be one of the people who keep this station doing what it's been doing for so long and what really there's no other sane way to get done.
We were talking before about getting information from the police as far as where demonstrations were being held by listening to their radios. Many of us listen to their radios in the comfort of our own homes by simply going through a scanner. But did you know that the NYPD has plans to encrypt their radios? And that those plans are set for this year. Now, they've said, and this was from a story a few months ago, that they likely will not move forward with encryption for at least another year. But basically, the scary thing about that is that this encryption will cut off all media groups who currently monitor police radio feeds for breaking news. It'll cut off all oversight of what's going on, what kind of conversation is going back and forth between command headquarters and people in the squad cars. And while cops will say this is something that you know, people have no right to listen to and it's for our own safety, I don't think that's true at all. I think we've never been in a time where we need more accountability. And this is a very serious danger that is being thrust upon us in the immediate future. It's happened in several places already. I'm not familiar with places that have encryption right now, but I do know that the radios go silent, and those of you who are out there monitoring, finding out what's going on, or just listening in, you're going to be out of luck if this goes forward.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we as citizens, we're the owners really of that spectrum, and especially news organizations trying to discern where to go to cover something that is in the public interest. When they initiate this digital system, they implement that. That means that the transmissions will be indiscernible over the air without keys, and the likelihood that they're motivated to give keys probably about half as motivated or less than, you know, giving out press passes in the first place. But I highly doubt the police department's going to be really keen on giving these keys to news organizations, because what if they're copied? And, you know, you'll just slip down this slope of just
what
being,
if they're copied? We'll be able to hear it like we can now.
Well, we should, and exactly as we ought to be.
But, you know,
but
the irony of all this,
those are just kinds of excuses.
But the irony of all this is that if you go out there and you use encryption, that's seen as a danger that
right.
Law enforcement has to be able to hear what you're saying, but law enforcement doesn't want you to hear what they're saying. That is a real danger.
Yeah, and it's a double standard, so
yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, Emmanuel. I mean, this really turns the encryption debate on its head. And let me tell you, this listening to the police can, you know, it doesn't just work against them. As somebody who's had a radio frequency scanner since he was 15 years old and been listening to the police for about 27 years, I have to say that listening to them has always given me, you know, some measure of comfort and heart, and hearing how they handle very stressful situations calmly and coolly. I mean, and hearing, you know, real professionals do their work as law enforcement agents, you know, was pretty interesting. I don't think that this is something that the police should willingly give up. On the other hand, two points in counterpoints here that I want to make. When I lived in London, and I couldn't listen to the police on a radio frequency scanner, it felt weird to me. It felt like I was missing something, and that something was being, you know, deliberately kept from me, and frankly, because it was. And it just, as an American, it feels like hiding those communications and preventing that form of transparency is particularly un-American to me.
Yeah, but Alex, let's be real here. That kind of transparency, it's not an American thing, because the police departments hide behind all kinds of anonymity constantly. A cop is seen doing something horrendous, and his name is withheld. You know, a cop kills somebody, he can go home to his wife and kids and get the story straight with the other cops that were involved. Nobody else gets that kind of shielding from justice.
That's different. There are a number of mechanisms, both legal and technical, that we could go into that shield police from responsibility. But the radio waves has always been a place where the public felt like there was some transparency with respect to policing. Taking away yet another layer of transparency is a terrible thing. It's going to make people trust the police even less at a time when they should be trying to increase transparency and increase trust. Now, having said that, though, one other counterpoint that I want to make is I was listening to the Police last weekend during the protests and in the throes of the protest, and having listened to them for 27 years on a frequency scanner, I have never heard cops panic before. When I was listening, and from Pennsylvania, I was listening, you know, through the internet on actually through my phone on 5.0 scanner, the app.
Like a repeater system?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They were panicked when they were discussing the protests around 12th Avenue and 12th Street and Broadway. They were panicked when they were discussing what was happening down in Soho. I'd never heard that before in my life, and it really made me, you know, reconsider what I was watching on CNN and MSNBC relative to what I was hearing on the police scanner. So, you know, it's I think it would be absolutely terrible for them to take that level of transparency away.
Well, you also have to think a bunch of people who are this heavily armed and protected panicking at the same time. Well, actually, you know what? It does kind of explain what we've been seeing. Those are the actions of people who are panicking and have lost control of what they're doing. So, but having access to that information, to that raw data, that is so important. That's something that, especially in New York, we need to hold on to. So, this is a fight that I don't see being being talked about anywhere else as far as transparency. Well, the radio waves are pretty damn transparent if they're unencrypted, and we need to hold on to that for the NYPD. We cannot let them just go silent and have secret communications amongst themselves only that we are not privy to in any way.
Yeah, and of all the times that they could be looking at reducing the police's accountability, transparency, and all those things, right now is not the time. Read the room.
Yes.
Yeah, know your audience.
Speaking of reading the room, you hear about this. IBM has decided to end commercial sales of facial recognition. And they're talking about this spreading all kinds of other places. Amazon and Microsoft, according to this story, remain the only two major tech companies actively attempting to sell facial recognition software to governments and to law enforcement.
There might be late breaking news.
There is late breaking news. I have it in the next sheet there.
Okay.
Amazon has just announced moments before the show, apparently they wanted to get it on the air, that it will suspend the police use of its controversial facial recognition technology for 1 year after advocates and workers slammed the company for supporting the George Floyd protesters while still promoting its technology to police. Now, their software is called Recognition, spelled with a K, and they've been selling that to police departments across the country. But numerous studies have found bias in the software that disproportionately target black people and other darker-skinned people. Just last week, Amazon made statements against police brutality and systemic racism amid protests against police brutality that erupted after the death of George Floyd. Now, this rung hollow to many advocates, as AWS had still been working with police departments while studies have shown that black people are more likely to be stopped, searched, or killed by police. Also, the ACLU found in 2018 that the software incorrectly matched 28 members of Congress with people who had been arrested for a crime, and that false matches were disproportionately of people of color, including 6 members of the Congressional Black Caucus. So in that sense, I guess, you know, the software is right in line with the police departments and the status quo of the country, but still not something we should accept. A year, that's what they're suspending it for. Not good enough, but it's a start, and it's something that we need to keep the pressure on.
And the thing to note about facial recognition is that, like you said, the tech just is not that good yet. It's still early days for facial recognition. It doesn't work well all the time. It especially doesn't work well on people of color. But if you give, like, say, the police department a tool and tell them that this is what this does, they'll just take things that it says as read without questioning the information, and they will let the machine make the decisions. And that is really dangerous. And I think we have to realize the potentials of what's going on right now, as well as be realistic about what we can actually do with it right now. And neither of those are good things if law enforcement and authorities and people like that overreach with it.
Yeah, and that, I think a really close look at some of these systems that we don't get to look at, right? They're black boxes that, the algorithms at Facebook and all of these different sorts of companies are like the most closely guarded things. So when you're training these kinds of AI systems with data that is human in essentially how it, you know, how we'll draw upon data sets that are essentially human, that were built by humans, that are probably statistically based on human structures and systems. And at this moment, we're sort of critiquing some of those systems. How can you really trust that AI to compensate for biases that are ingrained in how it was taught in the first place?
Exactly.
One really interesting aspect to this is when we went to this protest event, everyone was wearing a mask, and before this pandemic, wearing a mask to a protest would get you hauled off. There are laws on the books that you cannot be masked in public. You cannot be disguising your identity at these things. But now that that's de rigueur and everyone's wearing their masks, they can't do anything about that, which meant that, like, I think more people are comfortable protesting given that they're going to be masked.
It is a weird time. I'll say that. Yes, you're supposed to wear masks now to protest. But I still get the feeling that if you wear the kind of activist mask that they're familiar with, they might still come after you. And certainly they don't like religious coverings if it's a certain religion. We've seen that in Europe as well. Continuing along the lines of changing things and putting pressure on the status quo, there are all kinds of monuments and memorials that bear the names of men who fought to preserve slavery and uphold white supremacy. And they're facing a reckoning as demonstrations against police brutality have erupted across the country in response to the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. This from the New York Times. The protests have also reignited a debate within the military community over 10 army bases named after Confederate leaders. I did not know about this. Did not know this. Now, basically, as recently as February, military said it had no intention of changing those names. That's according to the military website Task and Purpose. They backtracked on that position. A Pentagon official said on Monday that Secretary of Defense Mark Esper and Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy were open to a bipartisan discussion on the topic of removing Confederate names from the bases. The announcement, first reported by Politico, came as each of the services had started to contend with many long-standing practices and allegations of racial bias that have gone unaddressed. The Pentagon official said Esper and McCarthy wanted Congress, the White House, and other government officials to weigh in. That, according to CNN, shifting the responsibility onto lawmakers. But today, President Trump shut the whole thing down by saying my administration will not even consider the renaming of these magnificent and fabled military installations. Just to give you a brief outline of some of them. April 11th, 1861, Brigadier General Pierre Beauregard, commander of Confederate forces in the Charleston area, demanded that Major Robert Anderson of the Union Army surrender his command at Fort Sumter in South Carolina. Anderson refused. Beauregard opened fire, and the Civil War ensued. Today, Beauregard has a U.S. Army base in Louisiana named after him. Anderson does not. He's not alone. At least 9 other major army installations are named for generals who led Confederate troops, a practice the Army has defended for years based on the assumption that they have a significant place in our military history. You know what, Army? You know who else has a major significance in our military history? Hitler. I don't see any statues or military bases named after him, but he sure ranks up there. Among the former states of the Confederacy, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, each have one army base named for a Confederate general, according to a 2017 Congressional Research Service report. And I am so ignorant. I did not know any of this. I had no idea. The site was Fort Benning. Fort Benning in Georgia. The namesake is Confederate General Henry Louis Benning. They want to rename that, obviously, they're suggesting Sergeant First Class Alwin Cash, a black soldier, Georgia native, who died in 2005 after his Bradley fighting vehicle hit a roadside bomb in Iraq and erupted in flames. He returned to the vehicle 3 times while he himself was on fire to rescue his men who were trapped inside. Sounds better than a Confederate person. Army Master Sergeant Roy P. Benavidez's name has been suggested as a replacement for Fort Hood in Killeen, Texas, one of the largest U.S. military installations in the world, named after Confederate officer John Bell Hood. And that's absent from Fort Hood's official history page. it just goes on and on. But I literally had no idea that Army bases, military installations were named after Confederate soldiers. It makes absolutely no sense.
And there's Fort Bragg, of course, is another big one down in, I believe it's now North Carolina, the home of the 82nd Airborne. And in fact, if I recall correctly, the lyrics from the Johnny Cash song, Ragged Old Flag, it was Robert E. Lee Beauregard and Bragg, and the South Wind Blew Hard on that Ragged Old Flag.
Wow.
So Johnny Cash fan, you know, those three generals are actually, you know, in the lyrics to Ragged Old Flag about the, you know, bringing the country together. So, yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a fascinating time we live in. Having worked in the Department of Defense and for the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, changing those names, I could see there being a lot of resistance to it, both on the right and the left, though, to play devil's advocate, because those names have become so synonymous with the divisions that they house. Like Fort Benning, Georgia is where people go to jump school. And after they go to jump school, then they, you know, maybe they join the 82nd Airborne over at Fort Bragg. So, you know, I'd be curious as to whether members of the armed forces want these changes themselves.
You know, changing a name, I don't think is that big a deal. People change their names. Sports teams change their names. Countries change their names. And we move on because we're supposed to be moving forward. And this is something I think most people, maybe most people knew about this, maybe not, maybe like me, they didn't. But I think when most people find out about it, they say, yeah, that's not right. There's something better we can name this after. And I think this is a great example. Did you know, by the way, that there are Confederate monuments in New York? I had no idea about this. In the Bronx, for instance, there are busts of Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee on the Hall of Fame for Great Americans at Bronx Community College. Now, the college plans to remove the statues. I'm not sure if they did it yet, but I didn't know about that. Hastings on Hudson, Confederate marker at Mount Hope Cemetery, Elmira, UDC monument at Woodlawn National Cemetery dedicated to Confederate soldiers who died in Elmira prison. They're under 24-hour guard, by the way. In Brooklyn, right in our hometown here, a tree at St. John's Episcopal Church bears a plaque installed by UDC in 1912, reading, "This tree was planted by CSA General Robert Edward Lee while stationed at Fort Hamilton." Well, that plaque was removed in 2017. So there is progress. But you know what? In Fort Hamilton, there's General Lee Avenue. There's Stonewall Jackson Drive. Now, Andrew Cuomo has requested the Army, unsuccessfully, to have those streets renamed. But maybe that's a good place to start, renaming those streets. Pressuring the Army to do that. They want to have a dialogue? Let's start there. We're out of time. And I'm sorry about that. Time just went by so fast. But we will be back. I think we'll be back next week. I look forward to it if we are. Please continue to call 516-620-3602. Pledge whatever you can afford. And write to us, oth@2600.com. Good night.
Beef is not what Jay said to Nas. Beef is when the working folks can't find jobs. So they trying to find niggas to rob. Trying to find bitches guns for them to finish the job. Beef is when the crack babies can't find moms. Cause they end up on bars. I like my hard bars. Beef ain't the summons in for hot 9-7. Beef is the cocaine and AIDS epidemic. Beef don't come with a radio edit. Beef is when the judge calling you defendant. Beef, it come with a long jail sentence. Hand it down to you in a few short minutes. Come through for a visit. I tell you how she pregnant. Buy some of a nigga. Beef is hot love. Push your hand back. So they need a loan for your home. But you're too broke to get it. And all your little kids doing is getting bigger. You trying not to raise them around these wild niggas. Beef is when a gold nigga got your seed in her. A manicure hand out like, pay me, nigga. Oh, I'm telling your wife for starting up some foul rumor that to ruin your life. Beef is when the gangster ain't doing it right. And other gangsters have decided what to do with his life.
would do it in fight. Beavis, Miss Wallace, still don't know who shot Biggie. And Beavis, well, the herb not being here with me when a soldier ends his life with his own gun. Beavis trying to figure out what to tell his son. Beavis, oil prices and geopolitics. Beavis, Iraq, the West Bank, and Gaza Strip. Some Beavis big and some Beavis small, but charcoal Beavis not beef at all. Knowing this real life is happening every day. And it's realer than a song that you get in case play.
My name is Ralph Pointer. I am a member of the WBAI Local Station Board. The next meeting of the Local Station Board will be Wednesday.